Minehead Baptist Church Sermon Podcast for Sunday, the 24th of May 2009. Hello and welcome. Thank you once again for joining me. My name's James and I'm the web guy here at NBC. This week we had a special guest. Stefan from Habitat for Humanity came to speak about the work of the charity. The reading is Matthew 7 verses 24 to 29, and then we'll hear Stefan and the work of Habitat for Humanity.
The reading is Matthew 7, 24 to 29, and can be found in the Bibles, page 972. The Wise and Foolish Builders. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law.
Good morning. Good morning. It's lovely to be with you this lovely, what seems like summer morning. I drove down from Banbury in Oxfordshire this morning, so it was absolutely lovely. And it's a pleasure to be with you here at Minehead Baptist Church. As I said, my name is Stefan and I work for the organisation Habitat for Humanity. And it's a great pleasure to be able to share with you a little bit about the work that we're doing in over 90 countries around the world presently. But let me just kind of take a little bit of a backward step. We read words from Matthew chapter 7, a very, very famous parable Jesus tells about a wise man and a foolish man and where they go to build their homes and the particular foundations that they build their homes upon. And it strikes me that in the course of Jesus' work and ministry, as he travels from town to town, from village to village, city to city, one of the things that he wants to do is engage people on the level of their imagination and on their hearts. And the way he does that, he tells stories, stories that grip people's imagination, stories that force people to stop and to think. And I don't know about you, but one of the things I have taken from my childhood is a love of stories. Well, that was from my parents reading to me most nights before going to bed, and then beginning to explore stories myself. And maybe you can detect from my accent that I'm not from round these parts. I'm from a place called Lurgan, which is very, very close to Belfast in Northern Ireland. And in the particular area and the context that I grew up, there was a lot of trouble, conflict that's well documented, and as a result, there weren't too many people who really wanted to come to my particular country on holiday, and we became very, very insular, very, very focused on our own particular problems, and resultantly, we didn't really have too much of a bigger picture on the world, and so for me, I had to explore the world through the medium of films or books, and it was through exploring stories about different parts of the world that I got to see a bigger picture. I began to look on the world from a different perspective. And one of the very, very first books that done that for me was a book called To Kill a Mockingbird. I don't know if anybody ever read that book. It used to be on the school syllabus. I don't know if it's on the school syllabus any longer. But for me, To Kill a Mockingbird, really the essential storyline is two young kids are growing up in some of the southern states in the United States of America, and they're confronting some of the racial conflict that is going on in their particular country. And for me, this was new. For me, it was news. And it opened up my mind to a bigger story, a bigger picture that was going on in the world around us. But one of the essential ingredients of the story, one of the things that made it successful for me, was the fact that it was accessible. I could engage in the story because the story was told through the eyes of two young adolescent teenagers growing up. And so what you had was a story that explored some of the big, big themes going on around the world, racial injustice, strife, social tension, some of the things that we do want to engage with and that our faith lead us to want to engage with. But there was a subplot, a smaller story that was going on at the same time that made it accessible for somebody like myself. At Habitat for Humanity, we also have a big picture, a big story to tell about the world in which we live. And it involves a very, very significant proportion of the world's population. If you think about the world today, there's approximately 6.5 billion people that we share this planet with. 6.5 billion. I can't even begin to imagine what that looks like. But that is a lot of people. Now, I have some slides here. We can maybe just run our PowerPoint. I just press it. Or click my fingers. Or pray to God, please. We have a big story to tell. And the story involves, as I say, a high percentage, proportion of the 6.5 billion people that we share this world with. The United Nations and their Development Index tell us that 1.2 billion of that 6.5 billion people, now that's over one-sixth of the world's population, live and survive on less than $1 a day. That's kind of in terms of our exchange rates, that's not close to £1 a day, actually. It is close now. But what that means really is that you're living in absolute poverty. If you live on that amount of money per day, you're not going to live very well, and you're not going to live very long. Your quality of life is atrocious, really. Again, of that 6.5 billion people, 2.6 billion, that's over 30% of the world's population. So if we imagine there was 200 people here today, my mathematics is going to let me down now because I'm frantically trying to work out what is 30% of 200. Does anybody know what that is? 60. I'm thankful that there's people who know figures here today. That's over 60 people in this room if we took the world as a kind of microcosm here, right? We thought this is the world and all that is in it. 60 to 65 people within this room would be living in poverty housing. Let's see some pictures of this. Hopefully you caught the gist of that message. Far, far too many people who live and share this world with us live in deplorable conditions. They live in an environment in which people aren't designed to live. The Bible teaches us that we are cast in the image of God. And I think that as people like you and people like me who are cast in the image of God, the environment in which people are being forced to live is not reflective of the inherent worth, beauty, and glory that lies in people like you and I, brothers and sisters that we share this world with. So into this particular context, step Habitat for Humanity, and we are an international development agency, an ecumenically Christian non-profit, and our aim is to eliminate poverty through housing and to make the issue of inadequate housing a matter of both conscience and of action. On one hand, it's morally unacceptable that people live as they do these days, but we just don't want to talk about it. We want to actually do something about it. We want to tell, as I said before at the beginning, a big story of the world. But I think all the very, very best stories involve participation. They invite us to get involved. Now, have you ever maybe went to the movies and you get so engrossed in a story, the story that is unfurling in front of you, that you begin to empathise with the characters? Has anybody here ever maybe shed a couple of tears if you've been watching a movie? Come on, be honest with me. All the men are sitting. And some of the girls are nearly crying already, so they are. Sorry, forgive my sexism. Some of the best stories that I know, invite us to get involved, to engage in the storyline. Invite us actually to start sharing emotions. On another side, the same thing kind of happens to me when I'm watching football. I'm a big football fan. I don't know if you're a football fan and you're sometimes watching the TV and you see a ball go across the screen and you try to head it in yourself or you try to kick it. The best stories do the same thing. They invite us to engage and to get involved. So Habitat for Humanity, around the world we have completed to date over 300,000 homes. That represents about 1.5 million people who have got access to new building and new constructed homes through Habitat for Humanity programs. At the moment we're serving over 50,000 families a year, and sometimes that can be either building new homes, repairing and renovating existing housing stock. It can be supporting people on the level of legality, sorting out land tenure. It's a very, very important part of our work, actually safeguarding people's rights to the land on which they're living. It's also leading people to a place where they can access affordable finance, making some of the most marginalised people in the world a little bit more profitable, giving them the opportunity to do something with their life. But essentially, Habitat for Humanity are about building homes for people, decent, appropriate, safe homes for people to live in. Let's have a look at some of these homes. Maybe, Pauline, if you can maybe just forward that on for me, yeah. There we go. So we can see some of the different sorts of homes that we are constructing in the developing world. Top left-hand corner is South Africa, and something that's fairly typical of the region. But again, these homes are permanent, they're safe, and they're decent. Families can have a decent, safe living when they access housing through our programs. If we just go over one to your right as you're looking on, this is a different sort of home, but it's something that reflects the climate and the region in which it's built. This is in Papua New Guinea, which is in the Asia-Pacific area. You'll see that the home is built on stilts. Habitat homes will look dramatically different from region to region because we have to bear in mind that there is all sorts of different contextual, cultural and climate issues to build into the actual design of the homes themselves. So Habitat for Humanity, we are, as I said, an international development agency that are about resourcing local communities to do something about the issues of poverty and poverty housing in their own particular localities. We partner with local groups, we resource local groups, and we lend to them, so to speak, our expertise and our abilities to pioneer housing programs in economically marginalised areas around the world. So that is who we are and it's what we do. But maybe a more important question than who we are and what we do is the why we do what we do. Why do we build homes? Well, essentially, we at Habitat for Humanity believe that poverty housing is poverty's stamp. There's no other issue that expresses poverty more clearly than where we live. Now, that's as true in our particular country as it is in the continent of Africa, as it is in the continent of North America or South America or Asia Pacific. If we want to see the levels in which people are living, we just need to go to where somebody lays their head at night. We just go to the place where people are bringing up their families, and we'll be able to tell very, very clearly as to whether or not somebody is trapped in poverty. And we feel that by intervening on the level of housing, by giving families, by giving people around the world the opportunity to get access to decent housing, it gives them this new platform on life, a new foundation on which to build their lives. And Jesus, as we read at the very, very start, he talks about good foundations in life and how a wise man built his house upon the rock. Good foundation. Well, at Habitat for Humanity, we're also about laying good foundations. Good foundations in which families can be brought up in health. Good foundations in which families can gain access to education. Good foundations in which from this place, this new platform, they can get access to a far, far better quality of life and of living. I've got a short DVD to show you because I actually think that the best way that we learn about the effect that poverty housing has on people is by listening to some of our homeowners tell their story as well. So if we just run the DVD, that would be great.
For more than 2 billion people in the world, that's over a third of the world's population, this, or something like this, is home. They're nothing more than shacks built from mud and pieces of scavenged material. It's an oppressive, demeaning, unjust and miserable environment. People get wet when it rains, they're too hot in summer and too cold at night. But it's the everyday reality of poverty housing in today's world. I'm getting old and I need something to rely on. Over 53% of the world's population now live in urban areas. And there are over 400 cities in the world that have over a million people. City infrastructure just can't cope, and it's creating one of the world's greatest challenges, the urban slum. This here is not a house, it's a toilet.
It's a toilet.
And it opens into an open sewer and drains directly into the river. There actually isn't any reason why people should live like this. You can help us by being part of our new Hope Builders campaign. By becoming a Hope Builder, you can help us nail poverty housing forever. At Habitat for Humanity, we build over 20,000 houses every year. And so far, we've built over 200,000 homes in 100 countries. And every one of them is built with our new home partners' own hands. They all pay for their homes with a low-cost, non-profit mortgage solution, where the poor are not seen as high risk, but actually as people in a just repayment scheme. And all of those payments are recycled into that local community to build more homes. This is a permanent solution to the cycle of poverty. We're at the home of Ndeti and Rachel, two Habitat for Humanity homeowners. We're meeting them for the first time today. Ndeti, what was it like living in your old house?
The old house had a lot of problems. During the rainy season, the mud used to fall, so we had to keep repairing the house. The health of the children was very bad because there used to be insects on the floor and they used to hit my children on their fingers and their toes, and the dust in the house was ever disturbing. All along, I had decided to build a good house, but because of my low income, however much I tried, I could not make it. And if it were not for Habitat, I could be living under the suffering in the old house. There is a big difference between the new house and the old house, because my children now, they can do their studies very well. They are in a good place. Their health is also good because they have no dust in the house. And generally, life in this new house is very good.
You can become a Hope Builder by committing to raise £1,235, the average cost of a typical Habitat for Humanity home in the developing world. You can do that in lots of different ways. Of course, you can donate it, or you can raise it, or you can even leave a legacy in your will, or give £12.35 a month. Perhaps you prefer to join one of our volunteer teams and help the family in need change their lives forever. You can do all of these things as an individual, an organisation, or just a group of friends, or maybe just in your family. Be a Hope Builder and help us nail poverty housing.
There's some pretty horrific scenes that we have just looked at there over the last few minutes. I can remember maybe about 8 or 9 years ago, for my first time in life, I visited a slum. You see that as of last year, over 50% of the world's population now are said to live in urban areas. That means they're not living in the countryside, in agriculturally based areas anymore, for the first time ever. And as I say, about eight to nine years ago, for the first time in my own particular life, I visited one of these slums. And I have to say that the experience traumatised me. It traumatised me on any number of levels. I can remember pulling up to this particular slum that we were visiting. And again, once I got out of the particular vehicle that we were travelling in, I can remember just being hit by any number of physical sensations. The smell, the sights, the families themselves struggling to make a living. And after being there for a few days and meeting some people, something within the dirt and the mud and the grime and the squalor, something very, very beautiful began to shine through, and it was the people themselves. It was the people themselves. It was a beauty, a dignity, a strength. Certainly the people that I had the pleasure of meeting and working with. And it's my pleasure in life, actually, to represent those people in front of congregations like yourselves. People who are determined to do something about the environment in which they, their families and their communities are being forced to live in. It's my pleasure to almost speak on their behalf and to invite people to partner with them, to participate in their story. You see, participation and transformation through participation is a very, very important ethos and principle within the world of Habitat for Humanity. You will have seen from the little video there that in most of our contexts and work around the world, we partner with our prospective homeowners. On one level, they pay for the homes that they get within the Habitat for Humanity programs. They're very, very low repayments. They're designed in such a way as not to hamstring a family in terms of how they actually go about repaying the loans themselves. But they also show their willingness to partner with us in all sorts of different ways, sometimes working on the homes themselves, and sometimes it can be serving in administrative roles. But the underlying fundamental aspect is that they show a willingness to partner with us to help themselves out of poverty, but also to help their other community neighbours out of poverty as well. It's one of the great things about our vision of development, because we believe that where there is local participation, then communities can be transformed over the long term. Transformation through participation. Just again, very, very quickly and in conclusion, I began this little talk about how the best stories tell some of the big, big narratives of life. And they tell it through the little subplots. And those subplots invite us to engage and to participate ourselves. At Habitat for Humanity, we also invite our donors to participate in the program. Sometimes that can be through really just becoming aware of the issues. It can be picking up the newsletter, reading some of the stories in there, and becoming a little bit more aware about what are the issues around poverty housing around the world. It maybe can be praying for our work. It can be giving money. The other thing is that's very, very popular within our program is our volunteer program called Global Village. Groups and individuals from around the UK who are sent over to work alongside our partner affiliates around the world. And that may be something that a number of you are interested in. I'm going to be around after the service today. Please come and speak to me. Pick my brains. Don't pick too hard because there's not too many of them. But if you have any questions, any queries, anything, please do stop by. I have a little stand at the back, so please make your way to me. Thank you for listening so well, and God bless. Thank you.
If you'd like to know more about the work of Habitat for Humanity, please go and check out their website, which is at habitatforhumanity.org.uk. Or there's links in the show notes over at mineheads-baptist.com/sermons. And that's also the place where you can leave a comment if you'd like to about the sermon today. Well, thank you once again for listening. Please stay subscribed, and I'll speak to you soon.